What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan.
All right, Stallion, there is a lot of value in recording what we do. And here's a story I want to share with you.
Okay.
So my daughter, Betsy, who's 10, came up last night after being on my old computer and says, Daddy, I've been writing down answers and questions from a podcast you did. I'm like, what do you mean?
Oh, wow.
And she brings this like notebook page with me to me, and it's got all of these questions. Like, what would you do when you're financially free? Like, what are the things that are keeping you from achieving your goals and objectives? And it's just like this question and question and question. It's like, it was almost like she had taken the notes from a podcast or a video that I had done and written them all out. And I was like, where'd you get this information? She goes, I've been watching your video on your computer, and it's like an old laptop I have. And she goes, you want to see it? And so I was like, sure. And so I went down, and this was like a recording to a financial freedom conference you and I did back in 2015. And it was just me, like it was a recording of me just talking. And she was writing down these questions, all of these different thoughts that I was talking about, like, what are the big hindrances? What's keeping you from being free? And, you know, taxes and debt. And what is it that you want to really improve? It's lifestyle. She's writing all this stuff down. And she goes, Daddy, I want to learn this stuff. Will you teach me this stuff? And I was like, well, sure, I'll teach you. And she goes, because I want to learn this now so I don't have these problems when I'm older.
Wow.
And it was just, and she goes, she's like looking at me like, will you teach me?
So brilliant.
I was like, absolutely. But it was just like, this was something she was just, you know, on the computer, like looking through old pictures and videos that were on the, on that drive. And I'm just thinking like, how motivated is she? And it makes me think about the guests that we have today, the motivation that we have to become financially free. And it sent our guest today, Avery Carl, on a mission to leave her corporate job, which is a common thing, right? That's something that Sure. We talk about a lot. But it was going into a short-term rental market, but doing it with a twist.
Yeah, I mean, I really appreciate Avery's, first of all, motivation, as you mentioned, being stuck. And she mentioned a couple really key things. I'm not going to take away her whole interview, but one of those was having that person to tell me when I could get a raise. And I think right. That's something so many people can resonate with is like, man, I want to create the value that I'm paid, not be waiting on someone else to recognize it and then subsequently pass it on to me. So that was huge from a motivation standpoint. But I love the fact that she's really a guide in this interview to help us see a path, right? We always talk about on the show how to take control of our finances, and then subsequently build an opportunity fund and then pick a path. And this way, she has the twist on short-term rentals from owning them, not just leasing them, as we've heard so many other people on our show have gone that route. What was the big thing you took away from that, Russ?
Well, I love the fact that we're in a market now that is going to get softer as it relates to real estate prices.
Right.
And I love that short-term rental is a cash flowing business. She did the twist that I took from it is that she was doing it in vacation rental destinations, where I've been more thinking of this as just for business travel. And I do know that, you know, from previous guests, they've told us you have to know who your audience is.
Who you serve.
Who is it that you're serving? And so she's wanting to serve a vacation renter. And to me, I like that concept too, is that there's places that you may want to go that you could own property in, get the value of the property's appreciation over time, but also get the benefit of the rental income that tends to be enhanced through the short-term market. So if you're like Avery, and you're like my daughter, and you're looking for answers and you want to find them now versus address those later down the road when they could become bigger burdens, make sure that you listen to the rest of this interview that we do with Avery Carl.
All right, Russ. We're talking about how we need more time freedom. We want to stop trading time for money. We want to tell our daughter, no, I don't have to go to work today. What's standing in our way?
Bro, I can tell you this. It's not need, it's want. Mm. I absolutely want to say, yes, sweetie, I can stay home. I don't have to be there. But the thing is, I have to take control. If you're like me, you want to take control right now. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Jump on a 15-minute call with one of our coaches, and they will walk you through a path that will help you take the first step into being able to answer that question for the rest of your life, that no, I don't have to go, because I have created time freedom through creating a process and a system that can get me there and get me there faster.
Welcome into the show. We have short-term rental guru Avery Carl of the Short Term Shop on the show. Welcome to the show, Avery.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, excited to have you on the show. It's fun. Even though we're all being quarantined, we get a chance to share insights to how we can create passive income streams. And your story is one of those, I think, resonates with a lot of our listeners, where you were working in a corporate job and you wanted a way out and you found real estate as that avenue. So give our audience a little background as to what you were going through and why you thought you needed to get out of the corporate grind.
Totally. So I think my wanting to get out reason is pretty similar to anyone's. I was just tired of it, tired of sitting in an office all day waiting for one manager to bestow upon me a $10,000 raise, possibly a promotion. I was not making very much at all. I was working in the music business as a marketing manager, and kind of started thinking about investing in real estate with my husband. And we wanted to find the way to make the most money. We had one down payment saved up. That was it. So we wanted to make the most money that we possibly could with this one down payment. So we went the short-term rental route, the vacation rental route. And long story short, we scaled one into five within a year, and then scaled five short-term rentals into a portfolio of 28 doors total. Some are low income, long terms, duplexes and single families. And then we just added a sixth short term rental in a different market this year.
All right. So that's a kind of interesting jump, though, to get into real estate and go into short term. How long ago was that for you?
In 2017.
Okay, nice. Because now it's become more vogue to be doing the Airbnb. But before, really, that was not something that was really talked about a ton. So what interested you into going the short-term route versus just long-term from the get-go?
So it was to maximize cash flow with the one down payment. But we did know that investing in long-term is a really tried and true way to do things. You know, it's worked for decades and decades for many investors. So the goal was never to build this huge short-term rental empire. It was to build enough of one to where we could come up with the next down payment relatively quickly every time we wanted to buy another one. So that's why we went the short-term route, was just to make the most money in the shortest amount of time so that we could scale as quickly as possible.
Okay, so let me ask a question about that. The vacation market, at least from the outside looking in, you obviously have an inside track and you know what you're talking about. If I look at like even places I enjoy going to at the beach, and I do the math, and I look at, okay, if I were to purchase this house or this condo, it's $700,000 and have to put this down payment, I almost, like, even if that thing was rented every week, you know, for 50 weeks out of the year, which we know is never going to happen, the cash flow does not seem to be enough to make that make sense from an investment standpoint. So how have you been able to identify, you know, this, as you mentioned, it's almost, it's an increase over a long-term rental. Like, how, what have you figured out to say this is better than a long-term rental?
That's a great question. So when I go to look for a property, well, first of all, I look in markets that have proven decades worth of history in short-term rentals. So regional drivable vacation rental markets. The three that I'm in are the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. So Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge area, the Destin, Panama City area in Florida, and the Gulf Shores, Orange Beach area in Alabama. So if you look at the data, and it, to answer your question, data is the answer. If you look at the data in all three of those markets over the years, you can find it, and if you've ever been to any of these markets, you understand that it has been the norm for travelers to rent privately owned properties on an overnight basis since the 70s. So none of these markets are places where people have historically been staying in hotels when they come to visit, like say a Nashville or any other metro area, really. So we started there, and you really just kind of have to look at the data, which there's several places you can get it now just as a regular person and not, you know, some kind of industry insider. There's AirDNA, which their data isn't perfect, but it's getting better all the time because it is a big aggregate data scrape of all the properties that are on Airbnb and VRBO over the past several years. So that's a good place to get good, accurate data, or as accurate as it can be. Another one is Key Data, a little bit more expensive, but they're tracking not only the properties that are listed on Airbnb and VRBO, but also the properties that are managed by the big or medium to big mom and pop cabin and beach rental companies, because a lot of those don't use Airbnb and VRBO just because they've been around forever and they're resistant to using that technology. Also, two of the major vacation rental managers in the country, Vacasa and Evolve, they give pretty accurate projections of what properties should do. So anyway, you start with that data of what the gross annual income should be for the size property that you're looking at, and kind of work back from there. So if a property is going to make $100,000 a year, you take a look at what your mortgage is going to be, what the potential expenses are going to be, and then work your way back. And if it makes sense, then it's a good investment. But if, like you're saying, you're either breaking even or in the negative, obviously it's not a good one.
Yeah.
All right. So Joey jumps right into the numbers part, Avery. He's a buzzkill on virtually everything that we do. So there's, let's spice this conversation up a little bit, because this is the things, like, what are those internal questions that we have? Like, one, I love the fact that you're choosing destinations that I want to travel to. I mean, who doesn't like wax museums and taffy? I mean, the places right. you named
right.
have an abundance of that, right? But at the same time, it's a place that I would want to go to. And I can see that being a regular rental place. So the internal question I have is, will it stay rented? It seems like the three locations that you just named that you're in, that's a pretty obvious one, right? So, but I want to make this current, because we're recording this in the middle of the quarantine of the coronavirus, and obviously that's in people's minds, like, oh man, I really love this idea of the short-term rental, but what if we're in another apocalyptic scenario like we are today? So how are you guys handling that? Talk a little bit about what's going on today, because if it's working or can work or can at least break even during these markets, clearly it's going to do well in good markets. So talk a little bit about what you guys are doing today to handle some of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really interesting question. Certainly very relevant to what's going on this week. So as far as my Smokies properties, we did, and I'm not saying that we haven't been affected in both markets, because we have. It's not been good. Obviously, big black swan event. There's not one segment of real estate investing that this isn't touching. So with our properties in the Smokies, we did have a big wave of cancellations initially when things started shutting down and people started saying, oh, well, this is a serious thing that we're dealing with here. It's not just like a, you know, a swine flu from 10 years ago. So we got an initial wave of cancellations and we're like, oh crap, okay, what's going to happen now? And then within a week, we started having some bookings trickle in of people who are in driving distance. So Nashville, Atlanta, Chicago, we've had a few of people who live in apartments or are just sick of being at their own house who wanted to social distance, take a staycation somewhere else. So we are running at about 30% in the Smokies of what we normally would in a normal March, which is covering the expenses. So, you know, this is the absolute worst case scenario for, I think, anybody who owns an Airbnb, and our expenses are covered. So it's really best case scenario in something like this. Well, okay, our expenses are covered. We're not having to pay our mortgage out of pocket. We're not having to pay other expenses out of pocket. You know, it's still a little early to tell, you know, what's going to happen next month. But as of now, most of our bookings that are 6 weeks out, 4 to 6 weeks out, have it canceled. With our place in Destin, kind of the same thing. The beaches are closed, so we're not getting people who are like, oh, we're going to take this opportunity to do a long spring break. But our place does have a pool in the backyard. So we actually had to turn down a $6,000 booking that wanted to stay for 30 days. So we're getting bookings there. I mean, we had to turn it down because we're kind of at the very end of a rehab with it. And it was the only time for the rest of the year that they could install our new cabinets. So we had to make a decision there, take this booking or sacrifice the rest of the year, because the cabinets in it right now really are ugly and it is going to make a difference with our photos and our bookings. So anyway, all that to say is it 100%? Of course not. But are the bills being covered? Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I have a question. Then you talk about internal questions going on. In my mind, I've mentioned to you pre-show, Avery, we've had some experts in short-term rental space that are doing the lease options where they're leasing from somebody and then putting them on Airbnb. And I think you mentioned it's almost like an arbitrage, like they're making that much more than what they're having to pay in rent every month. And they're just taking that cash and either reinvesting it in other short-term rentals or buying long-term rentals to supplement long-term wealth building. Help me understand this. Your decision to own the vacation rental versus the lease strategy in this case, to me, there's this challenge of, man, I've got to save up a lot longer to get a down payment on this short-term ownership deal versus the lease option. How would you answer that?
So I think that rental arbitrage, which is what that's called, is it is a good way to build some cash flow quickly. But in the long run, it's just creating a job for yourself rather than building long-term wealth. So there is a delta between what the arbitrager is leasing the property for and what the actual mortgage is, so that the owners, you know, they've got to make their money too. So there's this much space in between what they would be making if they owned it and what they would be making if they rent it and then Airbnb it. I think a lot of people don't realize that when you're buying a vacation rental, if it's 65 miles or more away from your house, you can do what's called a 10% down vacation home loan. And that's a really, really good option because a lot of people think that you have to save up the full 20%. As long as you're not putting a contract on that property, like a lease or a property manager contract, as long as you're managing it yourself on Airbnb, then you only have to put 10% down. So I think a lot of people just go straight to the arbitrage because they assume that, like you do with regular long-term rentals, that you have to put down the 20. So anyway, all that to say is arbitrage is a good way to make a few bucks quickly, but owning the property is, in my opinion, the way to actually build wealth rather than just create a second job for yourself.
All right, so let's talk about how we avoid making a job for ourselves in this, because clearly, when you're doing Airbnb, somebody is doing the cleanup, somebody's stocking the place, somebody's having to answer Joey's, you know, request for toilet paper at midnight or whatever it is. So
everybody's requesting toilet paper right now, Russ, I'll have you say.
Exactly. That's like right now you go into an Airbnb just to steal their toilet paper. I think. All right. So talk to us a little bit though. How are you able to delegate and offload that responsibility?
Awesome. That's a great question. And actually the headline on some of our listings right now are, we have toilet paper. But so what we do is there are quite a few automation tools nowadays to help with this kind of thing now that Airbnb investing isn't as new. And one of them is, and there are several apps like this, I'm just going to mention a few, but TurnoverBnB. So when you have a, you obviously you find your cleaning person, and when someone books on any of the platforms, it automatically alerts the cleaning person that they have to clean this day and they go clean. And it does alert you too that the cleaning person has acknowledged the clean, so you know that they saw it. So that automates that. And there are quite a few options for what's called a channel manager. We use one called IGMS. And what that does is it automates a lot of the FAQ stuff. So, you know, when somebody books our property, it will automatically send them their check-in instructions and everything they need to know, directions, et cetera, 2 days before they check in. Automatically sends them checkout instructions the day before they check out. It checks in on them and says, hey, it's Luke and Avery. How's it going? Let us know if you need anything halfway through. So that is a huge, huge time-saving tool. And also, you just really want to make sure that your listings are very, very clear about distances to things, because that's one of the big things that people ask. How far is it to this? How far is it to that? So if you set those tools up correctly, then one property only takes you about 30 minutes a week to manage. And it's really just kind of the equivalent of answering a couple of text messages a day.
Gotcha. All right. So I do have one question as it relates to the cleaning company. So, you know, if you're picking a cleaning company, do you have best practices on that? Or like, am I trying to find a mom and pop, or am I trying to get the, you know, I know there's a group called The Maids or whatever, and it's more of a corporate run organization. Is there a preferable method? Because clearly if that group flakes out on you, that's where you're going to run into issues.
Right. So that's another little niche industry in the markets that I'm in, is these have been short-term rentals for so long, well before Airbnb, that there is an industry of short-term rental cleaners from, you know, it's been a job there for decades. So when you're looking for a cleaner, you definitely don't want to find like a Merry Maids or something where their norm is to just come in and clean people's houses just like regular. You want to find true vacation rental cleaners, of which there will be a lot. Most of them will have worked for any of the major property management companies in that area at some point. They all kind of have the same checklist of things that they do. So, and as far as a company or an independent cleaner, it just kind of depends. For the smaller properties, I prefer just a single independent person. But if you have like a 5-6 bedroom, you're going to need a company, because that's going to take a long time to do. It's going to take 3 or 4 people. So because it's more work and the turnaround time is still just a few hours, you're going to need a bigger operation, obviously. And for the most part, they, since this is their livelihood, and if you're not booked, they're not working, because they get paid on a per clean basis, not a salary. They're really good about, you know, if they know they're not feeling well, or they know they have a wedding or something, they have people that they call to make sure things are covered. So you kind of just want to cover those questions with them in the interview process. Like, hey, what's your process if you know you're not going to be here, or things like that. So there's definitely a process and a list of questions that you want to ask them. But if you buy in a vacation rental market and not a metro area, it's not going to be terribly hard to find cleaners. I mean, they're probably not going to have beautiful websites and using great SEO for you to find them. So having a local network, maybe your agent, that's what we do for our clients, is we get them hooked up with everybody that they need, because they can be a little bit difficult to find on the internet. But a little bit of a local network goes a long way with these things.
So we've covered a couple of the major kind of obstacles of somebody getting started in vacation rentals, short-term rentals. What are some of the other things that you see are challenges that people maybe have kept people from doing this in the past?
A lot of people get too hung up on rental history. And what I mean by that is, so a lot of the local management companies that have been around for a long time in these areas are really resistant to using the technology that is putting them out of business. So Airbnb and VRBO. In the 90s, a lot of these companies or charging 40%, because if somebody wanted to buy a vacation home, it obviously wasn't an investment strategy back then, but if they wanted to buy one, they had no choice but to use one of these local managers to rent it out when they're not there. So a lot of those guys aren't keeping up with the times, because they don't want to use the technology that's putting them out of business. And because of that, it's a double-edged sword for them. their rental history is significantly lower than what it would be if they were properly utilizing those channels. Because in 2020, that's just how people rent. They go to Airbnb, they go to VRBO, they don't search Gatlinburg Cabin Rental Company and look through their listings. So when people get really hung up on, okay, it was with this teeny tiny management company, UncleRicky'sCabins.com, and it only did half of what all this other data is saying it should do, that's why. So it's important to, if this whole thing is an experiment, right? You have variables and control groups. The control group always needs to be how it's going to be managed rather than how it was managed before. Because if you're looking at five properties, they were all most likely managed by different people. So you really can't compare what the previous numbers are compared to what they should be, because it's just not comparing apples to apples.
Interesting.
All right, so you've been...
Go ahead.
Why do you keep interrupting me, man? Come on. Get with the program. One question per person. Let's rotate.
Your turn.
And you're talking about Uncle Ricky's. I feel like I'm sitting in front of Uncle Ricky's rodeo center as we speak right now doing this. So let's keep Uncle Ricky on the up and up, because he may come get me pretty soon. So clearly this has been an avenue that you and your husband have taken to acquire multiple short-term rentals and then moving to, I think you mentioned like 25 or 30 long-term rentals. So what's the end game for you guys? Where are you going with this?
To get to as many properties as we can in as little time as we can. So I don't know. I don't have a specific number of properties that is the, okay, you know, we've made it. But if I can get to six figures net from my long-terms only, not my short-terms, I don't count my short-terms as income. That's specifically to be invested. But I am probably four properties away from getting my long-term rental income up to $100,000 a year. So after that point, maybe we'll reevaluate. Maybe we'll just keep going. In the markets that I'm investing in, you know, we'll see if the deals keep coming. Right now they do.
Hey, explain to me real quick. You said something in there that you look at the short-term rentals as just investment only. I don't think I completely understood what you meant by that. Would you expound upon that?
Sure. So I don't, when I'm looking at, okay, this is how much I'm making a month or a year on my investments, I don't even look at what the short terms are making, because what the short term, I mean, I look at it, but I don't count it as income, because that is solely to be invested in other properties. So we're not, anything that comes in on those, we're not living on it. Stuff that's coming in from the long terms, that's going in the bank account, and, you know, we may use it for things.
Okay, so what you're doing is taking the profit from the short terms in order to then put it as down payments to buy long term?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I got you now. I'm following you.
Yeah, Avery, you have to break it down really, really slow, really low. Bring the cookies to the bottom shelf, as he says. So walk us through, Avery, if you're meeting with somebody today who says, okay, I like this strategy. I like the idea of owning the property, taking that profit, moving into long-term rentals, like they want to follow this process. What would be, like, if you could break it down into a few steps, what would you be walking that person through if they were calling you up tomorrow and saying, hey, I heard you guys on this amazing podcast, Wealth Without Wall Street, and I would love to get started on this path?
Okay. So I would say first, we need to make sure that you're financially ready to do that. So do you have a down payment? Do you have a pre-qualification? And, we'll get help you get set up with that if you need a recommendation. And number two, we would want to identify.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me stop you there.
Okay.
You say down payment. What does that mean? A dollar figure in your mind, an average, what does that person need to get started?
Okay. So if you want to utilize the 10% down vacation home loan, which I recommend doing, it's got a lower interest rate than a regular 20% down investment. So, I mean, you can get into a property for $250-ish, depending on the market. It's going like the Smokies, everything goes pretty much over asking immediately if it's under $500,000, because it's just got a lot of investor interest. But if you wanted to scoot down to Destin or Gulf Shores, those are a little yet undiscovered by the masses of investors, and you can get into a two-bedroom condo there for that pretty easily. So you're looking at a $25,000 down payment plus closing costs, or maybe you can get those covered in negotiations. And most of the properties are going to come furnished, so you wouldn't have to worry about the expense of furnishing them. And I would budget maybe $2,000 or $3,000 for some initial small repairs and buying of sheets and towels, because the sheets and towels usually don't come with. But that's about it.
Well, and I think as we look at this, I mean, we are on the edge of a recession, if not already in one. I would think if I was going the route that you're explaining, looking to buy the property, this is going to be the time that the next 12 to 24 months is going to be the time where some of these people who have bought these properties are fleeing, and you're going to be trying to buy properties probably at a discount, if ever. Mm-hmm. Is that the way you look at it as a real estate agent?
Yeah. So it's hard to say. It just depends on how long this corona thing is going to hang around. If, let's say, it's over with in a month and things start going back to normal, I don't think that, I think it's kind of take a quick V and go back up to close to where it was. But as of right now, I've seen a few panic sellers floating around, a few panic buyers backing out of contracts with no contingencies left because they're worried about what's going to happen. So now is a pretty good time if you're comfortable. I wouldn't recommend it to a newbie necessarily, but if you have some cash reserves in place to float you the next month of your potential investment, now's a good time to get stuff because sellers are worried and scared that if they have to list their property back on the market, that they're not going to get another buyer. So they're more willing to negotiate out of fear right now. If this continues the way that it is, then that will obviously continue and probably escalate. But if it bounces back up, I think that, in my opinion, a lot of people, especially this summer, are going to be busting to get out of their houses even more so than usual. And our short-term rental income will go up. We'll have some higher prices per night than we have been seeing, in which case the sellers are going to be a little less negotiable. So, you know, it really just depends on how the next month and a half goes. But if things continue how they are, you're exactly right.
Gotcha.
All right. So Russ took you off track. That's also something he does. Squirrel, you know, he always has a squirrel syndrome. But so you were walking us through the process, the first one, and I stopped you to ask a clarifying question about the down payment amount, just so people know where we're fishing at this point. 25 to 50,000 sounds like a rough number that people need to have to get started. Mm-hmm. What would be the next step after that?
Okay, so you've got getting your finances in order. Choosing a market is very important. We're in three, and I kind of touched on it just a minute ago, but depending on generally, the two beach markets have been more negotiable recently than the Smokies. There's some seasonality differences in those markets, but they all do relatively similar gross numbers. So, you know, if you're somebody who wants to use the property some yourself, I would recommend the beach markets because they're a little more seasonal and there's going to be more room in your calendar, even though you're technically making the same amount of money to be able to do that, whereas the Smokies is kind of a steady year-round thing. So we'd help you choose your market and choose your price point, and then we'll kind of be off to the races with getting your property.
Awesome. So, it sounds like it's pretty simple. From there, like, let's say someone's running into trouble down the road, are you also providing any sort of guidance beyond the original sale? Like, somebody says, hey, well, now how do I scale this? Or how do I get to a long-term rental that fits this wealth building strategy that maybe I'm based out of California and there's not really a great market for me to do long-term rentals here because the price points are so high. Like, how would you take somebody to the next step?
Yeah. So we're available. I still text with clients who bought properties, you know, they haven't bought anything for me in 2 years, but especially if they run into a guest situation that they don't know how to handle, they'll call me and say, what do I do? Cause I've usually been through it. And then I do help people analyze other markets sometimes as well, because sometimes people, they're like, hey, you know, I live in Texas and I'm from this small town here and there's an oil refinery and it seems like it might be a good place to long term. Then I'll kind of work through that with them as well. I don't do so much on the real estate side, long term stuff, but I definitely help my clients to just analyze what their next step is.
So you just, that's really cool.
Doggone it, Russ. I mean, this is getting
all right. Go ahead, Joey.
Okay. I mean, I was trying to get to the really good news here. Okay. And that is, so Avery, you already painted the picture of, man, success for me looks like 100,000 net income from my long-term rentals. That's going to kind of cover my expenses. That's going to be something that I can look forward to. What do you see for someone that's taken this step, getting into this? Because what we're talking about on the show, and you may or may not know this, but most of the people that are working with us or on the show have large reserves in cash value life insurance that they're doing infinite banking, and they're wanting to pick a path. They've done the hard work of creating this opportunity fund, right? They work with their cash flows, they create an opportunity fund, and now they're ready to put it to work. And they say, man, this is what I want to head towards. What would you give somebody as the picture of success long-term, or maybe even some clients that you have that you would say, hey, this is what we're seeing as far as results that you could also have?
Okay, yeah, sure. So for clients that already have a pretty nice nest egg built up, I would definitely recommend a property that's 4 bedrooms or up. Those definitely have the highest return on investment, also efficiency. It's not any harder to manage a 10 bedroom than it is a 1 bedroom. So if the cash reserves aren't your issue, I would recommend, you know, picking up a couple 4 to 6 bedroom properties and letting the money kind of come in, roll in through that. And then picking, you know, everybody has a market that they kind of know for that they feel like would be a good one for long terms. So, I mean, past the bringing in the cash from the short terms, the sky's kind of the limit. You obviously want to stick to with long terms, what's called the 1% rule. So you want to be able to rent it out for 1% of the purchase price. That's what we stick to. So, you know, if we're buying something for $100,000, we need to be able to rent it for $1,000 a month. And that's kind of the benchmark for long-term investing. So any little market that they can find that does that, and if they need help, if my clients anyway need help with identifying that, we can help with that. But you know, anybody has kind of the, or maybe they live in the town, maybe it's the house next door to them that does that. So really the sky's the limit, and there's a lot of creative, or you don't even have to be creative, ways to do it. As long as you just can say, okay, this is how much the mortgage is going to be, this is how much it's going to make, you can go right on Zillow and see what things are renting for in your market. And I mean, it's really, there's not much advice to give beyond that.
But that's great. Well, I know, like, you brought up a couple of things in there that I want to ask, but I know we're running out of time. It's getting close to lunch, and Joey is like Mrs. Doubtfire at his house right now, so he's going to have to go out and make the kids lunch. So we need to bring this to a close. I know you have meetings to go to, so we really appreciate you sharing with us today, Avery.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Joey, if I wanted to be an expert, I'm maybe not an expert, but I still wanted to be knowledgeable on the whole concept of the infinite banking process. And I went to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. I got access for free because that's what you gave me, because I'm listening to this podcast. What would I do in there in order to learn more?
Simple as pie. Go to the left-hand side, click on courses, and there you can find Infinite Banking 101 and Infinite Banking 201. Can't wait to see you on the inside.
That is at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.